From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. This past weekend saw huge celebrations in Moscow and Crimea, marking the third anniversary of the reunification of the Black Sea Island state with the Russian Federation. Crimea hosted throngs of visitors, which included among them a number of European government officials who took the opportunity to conduct a fact-finding mission regarding the 2014 referendum that overwhelmingly called for reunification and to assess public opinion about the rejoining of the two. Nigel Sussman is a member of the British Parliament from the UK Independence Party, or UKIP. He was part of the European delegation to Crimea, and he offered his take on the situation there at a press conference Tuesday.
I was invited to come as an independent witness to the events in Crimea as they are today, and it's with incredible integrity that my hosts have allowed me the freedom to do that on my own merit and to explore that. And so now I must tell you what my findings are. Crimea is a beautiful place, and my experience of the people are that they are just as beautiful. I believe in the self-determination of people, and it's very clear to me that Crimea had a referendum, that that was a fair and open referendum, and that they clearly chose to join back with what they perceive as their motherland, Russia, and they seem extremely happy about that. I'm no international lawyer, but I also understand that everything has been operated in accordance with international law. The question now becomes why were sanctions applied and what can be done to remove them? I also understand that the current position is that sanctions are dependent upon the Russia completing its obligations under the Minsk II agreement, and from what I can tell, Russia has done so. It also should be pointed out that Russia isn't a signatory to that agreement, so I believe it's done everything it can, and therefore, in my opinion, the time for lifting sanctions is now. That time is over, and it's time to allow the Crimean people to allow them to get on and move on with their lives. I had one final thing to say, actually, which was, I commit myself to making sure that the truth is perpetuated out there in the wider world. I would also add that, I'm in favour of peace. And goodwill to all men, and therefore my view is that we should be trying to encourage Ukraine to enter into dialogue with Russia in order to solve this problem and move on. We are living in the 21st century, after all. It's a very small world. It's time to move forward.
The reunification of Crimea with Russia was used both as a political enabler of sanctions against Russia and a point of rallying anti-Russian sentiment in the U.S. and Europe, most recently in Monday's hearings before the House Intelligence Committee. For more on that, we spoke with Peter Lavelle, host of RT's Crosstalk, via Skype from Moscow, Tuesday. Peter, a pleasure as always.
It's always a pleasure to be on your program, Don.
So first I want to start with... I played this clip of Nigel Sussman. He's a group, part of a group of European politicians who just completed a tour of Crimea. They held a press conference today, and that's what he had to say about it. In essence, they looked at the conditions that the parameters of the referendum. He acknowledged its validity and that it was clear to him that the people of Crimea joined Russia voluntarily and that they're very happy. And he said also Crimea is a beautiful spot, and he hopes that Europeans, including people from the UK, get the opportunity to vacation there and get rid of these sanctions already. So let's start with Crimea and this group.
Well, it was 3 years ago when all of this happened. And it's very interesting watching the story evolve in Western media that Russia must give it back. You know, it's because it was so badly reported in Western media what happened to Ukraine after the illegal change of government, the coup there. The people of Crimea saw what was being done to the Donbass. They saw the rhetoric. They heard the rhetoric against Russian ethnic Russians and Russian speakers. So the Crimeans, they took their moment. And as you pointed out, and as this group found, that the conditions of the referendum were within international law. The result was really obvious. You could have guessed that one quite easily. There are even Ukrainians there that voted for the referendum because they saw what was happening in Kiev and what probably was going to happen, the disaster that did happen in Ukraine. As far as sanctions are concerned, I find it really odd because the average Russian is hardly aware, barely aware of sanctions at all. The import substitution that has been undertaken has filled that void. Certainly some bankers would like to have access to cheaper international capital, meaning London. I don't want them to because the Western financial system is toxic, still very toxic from the 2008 crisis. Other than that, it's really a non-story. So this kind of if you do this, we'll drop the sanctions. And Russia sees the sanctions as completely illegitimate. Illegitimate. So why should we give a concession when we see them as being illegitimate? And the Russian government does not even mention that officially. They do not want to negotiate sanctions. Go to the foreign ministry webpage, go to the Kremlin webpage, and there's no talk of that at all. Russia sees them as illegitimate. And at the end of the day, it's the Europeans that are paying the price for the sanctions, not the people of Crimea and not the people of Russia.
Yeah, Mark Sloboda tells us that the biggest impact he feels of the sanctions is that he now has to buy Russian Parmesan cheese instead of Italian. Outside of that, no, not much.
Well, I'll tell you, in all fairness here, I mean, when the high-scale cheeses, when the Russian manufacturers tried to reproduce them, they were quite awful. Yes, they were. Okay. But after a year or so, and there was competition made a better product, made a better price, and the quality is much better. You know, if you're a wine connoisseur, you want the best, maybe you like a certain kind of French one, but Crimean wine isn't that bad either. So really, the sanctions are it's such a moot point. When Westerners talk about it, Western media talks about it, I shrug my shoulders and say, we don't care. And I agree. You mentioned Mark Sloboda. Mark Sloboda and I both agree that I wouldn't mind if the sanctions were permanent, because it really shows that Russia has to rely upon itself. It should not be held hostage to whims of Western foreign policymakers. I mean, what importance is Crimea to people living in Oregon? Please explain this to me. Okay, what importance is Crimea to the people that live in Luxembourg? I don't see it as being important at all. And let's remind our listeners very, very clearly what happened. The coup in February of 2014 was an illegal coup. It overthrew the constitutional order of Ukraine. The Crimeans, when there would have to be any kind of changes in the security situation on the ground in Crimea, dealing with Russian troops that were legally stationed there, they had to call Kiev if they did anything. They did call Kiev. Nobody picked up the phone. No one picked up the phone. And then the game is up. So it wasn't the Crimeans that upset the constitutional order. It was the coup plotters and the people that took over after the coup. These are the people that should have been sanctioned, should still be sanctioned by the West. The plotters and the people that followed up on the coup. These are the troublemakers, not the people of Crimea.
And we have a pretty extensive record of that, a recorded telephone call outlining the next government of Kiev and members
with
of the
American
US
ambassador.
Right.
Okay. It's all out there. I mean, I suppose that tape has never been ever played on CNN or BBC, but it's got thousands and thousands of hits on YouTube. I mean, it's there as part of the public record right now. And I would like to remind you, the State Department never denied its authenticity.
Right. Yeah, we've played it here a few times. And, you know, the more important thing that's going on, and the implications, by the way, I think are as severe or more for the U.S. and the people living here as for Russia. And that's the game that's going on in front of, among others, but the particular venue yesterday was the House Intelligence Committee with, I mean, it was a 5.5-hour show trial yesterday that would have embarrassed not only McCarthy, but even Stalin, according to Dmitry Babich.
You know, it's really a tragedy how the United States is humiliating itself in front of the entire world. Let's face it, this story has been with us off and on for the last 8 months and very intensely since the inauguration of Donald Trump. If there was some evidence, I think we would have seen it by now. Some evidence. And I'm even got to the point where I'm tired of the story. It's like a fairy tale. I mean, you know, give me some substance here, because innuendo, anonymous sources. I mean, how long can you string this out? And Don, really, the danger now is not the silliness that we're watching. The danger now is, how do they walk this back? See, this is, we've got into it. It's tipped over into, oh my goodness, how do we get out of this? Michael Morell, the former acting director of the CIA, he's washed his hands of it. James Clapper said the day he left the intelligence community, said we have no evidence. He was on NBC. NBC is a big culprit in all of this, too. And he was repeatedly asked, no collusion, no collusion that I know of. I mean, these are people that are in the know, all right? I mean, why do we need all of these anonymous sources and BuzzFeed and all this other nonsense? I mean, this is what they're supposed to do for a living, right? And Michael Morell was obviously a cheerleader for the Clinton team on Charlie Rose. We need to start killing Russians and Iranians. Murder, committing murder, crimes, okay? And Charlie Rose hardly didn't react whatsoever, just kind of nodding his head as he usually does, okay? So, I mean, if these people say that there is, you know, there's a smoke because it's the media has turned it into some kind of circus, but there's, he even ended his sentence, there's not even a spark. So this embarrassment, this humiliation that the media is pulling the country through, it's just absolutely horrendous. How are these people going to walk it back? That's the next big question.
One of the things that I noticed, and it was the coverage of it afterwards, or the failure to probe it, really, across the media, and specifically today, Democracy Now! Was extremely disappointing on that point. The only person... the only issue that they were able to speak about in public, this according to Comey, was the question of whatever role Russia would have played in the election and any possible collusion with the Trump administration. He was allowed, he said, to answer that question in the affirmative, yeah, that there was an investigation because he had been authorized by the Justice Department. Now, the fact is that because of what happened with Sessions, and he had to make a public declaration that he would recuse himself, most likely that authority came from the senior deputy, and that senior deputy is a Clinton and Obama appointee. She was appointed to the Justice Department, to the U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington, D.C. District by the Clinton administration. She was brought into the Justice Department proper and made the the assistant deputy a national security by the Obama administration. And she was conducting, apparently, the witch hunt against Trump and Russia during the presidential campaign, and in October was elevated to the senior position of deputy attorney general for national security. She's the person that is next in line behind Sessions, and so most likely he was allowed to take this jab yesterday as a consequence of her giving him permission.
Exactly. And this is one of the tactics that the Democrats and the media have been employing ever since the inauguration, is not to allow Trump to fill in his administration. And this is obstructionism. Comey, in many ways, I have a level of respect for him. But saying, you know, I can't say we're going to have an investigation on this, but I can say we're having an investigation on something else. I mean, that's a bit rich, you know, from the highest law enforcement person in the country. The double standard is really quite obvious here. But other things that Comey said really makes me doubt his judgment. I'm paraphrasing him right now. We know that Vladimir Putin didn't like Hillary Clinton. Well, how do we know that?
Right.
How do they know what the Kremlin elite knows about thinks about Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? You know, for our listeners here, you know, this is again fantasy. What the Russian political elite thought about the American presidential election? They were just passing the popcorn around and watching in amusement. Because no matter what happens, whatever candidate is elected, there's going to be an adversarial relationship. To what level? Maybe we can talk about that. But, you know, clearing out the deep state in its hostility towards Russia, I don't even know if things were going smoothly for Trump if he could do that. It would take a long time. So the Russians are not naive about that, not naive about it at all. But, you know, let's remember. You have candidate Hillary Clinton equating the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, to Adolf Hitler. Well, I suppose there are people in the Kremlin that, you know, we don't need to deal with someone like that, that calls our leader someone akin to Adolf Hitler. But, you know, I think Comey just kind of went into the weeds there. I mean, even if you had a wiretap, let's say even Putin said, I really would like to see Donald Trump win. Well, what does that mean? And is that meddling? I mean, you can't have an opinion. I mean, it really, here are the highest levels of law enforcement and the legal system and legal minds. And it sounds like we're in a high school cafeteria. I mean, Comey just really kind of disappointed me with saying those kind of things, because you know what? He's echoing that ridiculous report that came out a few weeks ago in which RT takes up 7 pages of 25 pages. I mean, that was written by some kind of think tank intern, okay? And he's basically quoting that. I mean, I have to really wonder if he really was prepared for that that hearing, because saying things like that, he loses his credibility and he damages his reputation.
You know, and that report that you just mentioned, which is that supposedly was the case for Russian involvement in the election. First of all, they called it Russian hacking from the outset. And the popular understanding of that, you can tell by looking across the social media, Facebook, and even my Facebook page, where people that are looking to attack Trump as being some sort of a Russian agent view what happened as, you know, the Russians somehow changed the totals on the voting machines in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania. And as a matter of fact, even Jill Stein, in her first set of pleadings to order a recount filed in Wisconsin, also alluded to this, that we need to have confidence in the vote count because the allegations of foreign meddling and intervention are there. And yesterday there was an interrogatory on, you know, made of both of the two witnesses regarding specifically Wisconsin, Ohio, Florida, you know, et cetera, all of the states that were these so-called swing states. And there was an affirmative statement, made that, no, there was no messing with the voting tolls, you know, tally, period. That was that. That was a takeaway. No one's mentioning that, but the foundation of the narrative of Russian meddling in the election rests on the original allegations that somehow they actually changed the outcome of the vote count.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't want to be, you know, too glib here, but if Russia has the ability to influence the outcome of American presidential elections, then Putin should have done us a favor and not ever had Barack Obama elected president, okay? I mean, really, really. No, what this all is, it's just a scare. I mean, what I think is very tragic and actually quite stupid is that the liberal media and the Democrats are putting all of their eggs in one basket. With no evidence, after months and months of this, not a shred of evidence has come out. And what really angers me, and I have to agree with some of the Republicans during that hearing, is that they want to find out how did Flynn's transcript of his conversation that was surveilled get into the media. Now, that's a very serious, Comey even agrees, this is a very serious thing. But are they going to go anywhere with that? And that's what I want to know, because that will tell us a lot about the collusion, not between the Trump camp and Russia, but the collusion between the deep state and the media. That's what we need to find out. But they, of course, the Democrats don't want to go there. It's so sad that it's so partisan. And I don't remember the young man's name, the young congressman. He was on Tucker Carlson, and he's laying out the case against Russia. I mean, this guy was a nincompoop. I mean, he doesn't know anything about Russia whatsoever. And Tucker was really smart. He said, so should we use medium range or long range ballistic missiles in reaction? And, this guy was just caught sandbagged. He didn't know what to say because there is nothing really to say. And it's really tragic because, Russia and the United States do not have to be friends. I've said that many times on your program. But they can actually work together and that we can lower the level of hostility coming from Washington. We can lower the rhetoric and get down to brass tacks and actually do important things like taking care of the crisis in Syria. In other areas, the Europeans are, the Russians are on their side of the border watching the Europeans go into this ridiculous hysteria. Here are countries that have policies of very strong austerity, and now they're going to be spending more money on a military that they don't need because Russia has no interest in the Baltic states, has no interest in Poland, it has no interest in these things whatsoever. And all it does is it makes Russia have to react. And they get criticized for moving their troops within their own borders, and that's called Russian aggression. I mean, this is, again, lunacy.
One of the things that I thought was really cute the other day when Trump and Merkel had a joint press conference, there were two different German reporters that, tried to get Trump to respond to the, he sent out the tweet saying, "I've been surveilled," or what he wiretapped was the term he used in quotes. The news media here have been reporting Trump lies about being tapped, or Trump offers evidence-free claim that, et cetera, as if the idea of the Obama administration illegally wiretapping someone was too absurd to consider.
My goodness, that could never, ever happen. Barack Obama surveilled more people than any other president of the United States, bar none.
Merkel. I mean, he actually, with the government, his administration surveilled Merkel. And so the first time, I thought Trump was uncharacteristically, for lack of a better word, presidential. He didn't even respond to the first reporter that asked about it. And the second time, he just said, "Well, at least we have something in common." And he pointed to Merkel. After a second of dead silence, suddenly the room laughed.
Yep. But the mainstream media missed the entire importance of that visit by Merkel. I mean, if we had had a chat right before Merkel's visit to the White House, you and I would have both agreed, I'm absolutely sure that this is not going to work. Maybe the best face you could put on it is avoiding utter catastrophe and failure. Well, we got utter catastrophe and failure. It happened. Okay, but that was in the cards. But what's being missed, very, very importantly, is that where is Merkel's next foreign trip? It's Moscow.
Right.
Okay? And Merkel now has to see where she stands because agree with them or disagree with them, Trump didn't like what Merkel had to say about him during the campaign. Who would? I think maybe Trump should get a little bit thicker skin. It's called politics. But Merkel's isolated right now. She's isolated. The situation with Turkey is a catastrophe. The European Union is no longer a player in trying to resolve the crisis in Syria, as if it really ever wanted to resolve the crisis. You have the immigration crisis. You have political turmoil in other countries inside the European Union. And you want to pick a fight with the Russians. Angela Merkel, wake up and smell the coffee, okay? If you are, as the Western media says, the leader of the free world, I really hate that term, Don, because that was a Cold War, Cold War term, and we don't have the Cold War anymore. But Merkel has one last chance to break this deadlock. I don't think she has the political courage to do it, unfortunately. And again, the Russians are waiting for a response from Washington, from Berlin, from Brussels. You know, as I put on Facebook, you know, I watch all this turmoil in the United States and the European Union. And I talk to my crosstalk team all the time. And I asked them today, right before we did our recording, I said, Anya, if you could sum up what Russians want most. And she said, a better life, a better lifestyle. We want to be more prosperous. That's it.
Yep.
That's it
yep.
in a nutshell. It's pretty simple. Okay. That's all. And they all watch these hearings. They watch all these videos and they start laughing now. They say, these people talk about my country and they have no idea what my country is like. They don't have any idea what kind of people we are. And it's for them, it's just turned into a sad joke.
You know, you have during the campaign last year, President Putin was very clear about not offering an opinion of preference one against the other, that would be interference. And he didn't say that he preferred anyone during the entire course of the campaign. However, the allegation instead that rested in that report that you spoke about, the one released in January, was that somehow, and this is what's been playing out in Congress in various committees and such, that somehow RT in particular and Russian media had an impact on the election. And they talk about an election that's so close that activity at the margins could be decisive. We can't measure it, they said yesterday, but it likely had an impact. And that was the claim of that report. Not for nothing. Merkel, a whole host of European leaders chimed in on the U.S. presidential election. And media such as BBC and others that have a huge footprint in the United States, BBC has carried over New York City's NPR station, for example, for an hour every morning. The entire news hour is broadcast. They were very active partisans in the U.S. presidential election, and no one says a word about any of that.
Well, you know, I'm really honored. I'm really, really flattered. When that report that we talked about earlier came out, and 7 pages of the 25 were on RT, and actually in that report there were blank pages. So RT, it was even more than 7 pages in a sense, proportionally. You know, I guess I threw the election. I guess all the Democrats can blame me, okay? They can blame me for it. It's quite flattering. A lot of really smart people appear on RT, people that are marginalized in the mainstream. And we do have a very strong narrative how the station sees the world, though there are nuances. We have Larry King, we have Tom Hartman, we have Ed Schultz, we have me. You know, and all of those guys I mentioned, they're liberal, I think is fair to say. I am not.
Right.
And
right.
And if you look at that, they were actually, and if there's an observation, is that I would say many people at RT America were actually pro-Sanders, okay?
Right.
And so, I mean, if you look at what we did, I'd like to think we had an impact. People respected the fact that we talked to third-party candidates, which if you look at public opinion polls in the United States, then most people think that the third party should be given more airtime. And more media space. So I'm quite proud of our coverage. We were part of the mix. But to say that a small television network is determining outcomes in the presidential election, where billions and billions and billions of dollars are spent, again, I mean, I think you know, Don, I have to break it to you, but there is no tooth fairy and there is no Santa Claus. Now, I'm sorry if this hurts you, okay? But you know, let's call it the way it is. RT. Made a contribution, and I think a positive one. But to say it's critical in throwing an election, I think you need to go see a doctor if you really believe that.
Well, we'll leave it there, except that I'm glad you didn't throw the Easter Bunny in there, because the Easter Bunny is my favorite of the whole
bunch. Okay. Everybody has their sacred things, okay? Good, okay? I'll next time I'm on, I'll tell you what mine are.
Peter, thank you very much. I always enjoy speaking with you, and I look forward to seeing you again.
Anytime for you. All right. Bye-bye.
Take care. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.